read something this week, and it kind of struck me of, because it kind of goes with Proverbs a little bit. It said, the richest wealth is wisdom. The strongest weapon is patience. The best security is faith. The greatest healing is laughter. And the common bond is they're all free. All of those are free. All of those are free. Huh?
Can you do it one more time, please?
The richest wealth is wisdom. The strongest weapon we can have is patience. The best security we can have is faith. And the greatest healing we can have is laughter. And the common bond is they're all free. Don't cost us anything. Without understanding of wisdom up to this point, and I hope we're all starting to put this stuff into our memory bank, why would wisdom be considered the richest wealth from what we've studied so far? What does wisdom give us that is the richest thing we could have? You know, it says it's not comparable to jewels, diamonds, rubies. It's more valuable than that. Why? Yeah, Colin?
I would say the return is unending and it's eternal. The return is...
Amen.
Say the ROI.
All right. That's right. Return on investment. Yeah.
I was going to say it because we use it in everything. Everything, every facet of life, every facet of life. Every avenue, everything you come in contact with, some way or another, wisdom can benefit you in doing it.
Much, much more than material things. Well, why would our strongest weapon in life be patience?
What was that question?
Why is the best weapon in our life patience? Why would that? Why
patience.
Would?
I'll tell you this. It's good to have that.
Yeah.
It also helps you with being kind to others.
If you're patient, you never quit, do you?
Yeah.
If you never quit, then you go win, don't you? So you got the best with the better weapon out there.
Yeah.
Patience. Have patience. Stand still. Listen to God and have patience. Mm-hmm. How about the best security being faith? Why is that our best security?
Because that's eternal.
Eternal. It's an unwavering belief in God and what He's going to do for you. You've got strong faith. You've got an unwavering faith in God. And God can conquer all. How about the greatest healer is laughter? They said that your disposition when you're suffering, if you can have joy, laughter, that's a great benefit to your healing process. You'll have quicker healing, regardless of how much medicine you got to have or people working with you. If you got joy, if you got laughter, then that's a great healer. Greater than really the medicine, because if you don't believe and you're despondent about your situation, then it's going to take you a long time, or you might possibly not heal.
Harry?
Okay. Yeah.
That's Ray right there, isn't it?
That's what I said. That's I went
right
over to it.
That's right.
I went over to it.
That's right. Because if he had a bad attitude or if he was sad and depressed, you know, he would never come up.
And his wife said it.
I know. That one fits him so well.
How can we come up with an excuse for not being here and then see Ray here?
I know it.
What alibi do you have?
That is so good. Yes, he
is. I thought I'd bring that up. Good morning. Because that was the something that basically we've talked about all these principles here in class thus far. Chapter 9 is kind of a little break from what we've had, although it's really going to summarize We talked about the two women of wisdom and the two women, wisdom and folly. This will be the last chapter that kind of summarizes those two positions up, and then we're going to get into the Proverbs of Solomon, which is the word of God that's given to us on our memory bank. Then we're going to start filling our memory bank with God's wisdom. Verses 1 through 6. Somebody read that verses, if you would. 1 through 6.
Wisdom has built her house. She has set up its seven pillars. She has prepared her meat, mixed her wine. She has also set her table. She has sent out her servants, and she calls from the highest point of the city. Let all who are simple come to my house. To those who have no sense, she says, come, eat my food and drink the wine I have mixed. Leave your simple ways and you will live. Walk in the way of light.
Okay. What does that sound very like that we have read in the four Gospels? What situation? We're talking about wisdom there.
It tells me to not to stop learning, not to stop seeking after God's ways.
Remember the parable that Jesus told of the big banquet? Mm-hmm. The great big banquet hotel? And he told the people, and this is just a figurative thing, go out and invite everybody, go out and invite everybody with a bad place. And they all had excuses why they couldn't get there. And then when he said the doors were closed, he says, those who did not answer, the doors closed.
Well, Jerry, we have situations like this now. People have all kinds of excuses why they're not here. Where it's so important to be here, to learn, and to know. I think the videos or the live streaming we have, they use that as an excuse. A lot of them. I'm not saying all. But and I've talked to people from other congregations. They have the same problem.
Yeah. You're right. It's not just in this congregation here. I don't know what I do know about y'all, too. I miss them.
Yeah.
I miss talking to them.
Yeah.
I miss their seeing their faces. I miss the times that we get to. So, but when it's impossible, I understand that. A lot of things are impossible. But here's a good example of, you know, how we can overcome those impossible things. Yeah.
Thank you. Verse 6, the one that really caught my attention was say, foolishness and live and go in the way of understanding. I'm so glad that God has made us in a way where we can grasp His word for what it is. But it's up to us to try to get the meaning or understanding of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think understanding God's word is a key in our lives. Because Proverbs is a great book. Helps you with knowledge. It also helps you with making the right decisions without being foolish.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things I got a lot out of this out of this book.
Mm-hmm.
Because it does what it says. One thing about God, He says what it means, and it means what it says.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Simple as that.
Yeah. How about verse number 2? She has killed. This mine is, by the way, is the New England Revised, the English Standard Version, but read basically the same as all. It says, she has killed her beasts, mingled her wine. Some of them would say mixed her wine,
yeah,
and furnished her table. She's wisdom. This is wisdom is first explanation here, and then we're going to come to the foolishness when we get a little bit over it. She set a feast. She's got a lamb cooked. To have a feast, and then she mingled her wine. The two all mixed her wine, whatever you want to say. So that we basically understand, they had vineyards in that day. And that was one of their main products that they made. So we know that they have, and the only way you could keep grape juice was to ferment it. It would not keep, unless you had refrigeration, it would not keep.
Yeah.
And even if you had refrigeration, it won't keep for very long and start getting mold on it. Yeah. So they had to ferment that wine. But it's not like the wine we have today. The word mixed means they put water into it. That diluted it down. And it's been said it's either one-third or one-fourth was wine, actual wine, and then the rest of it was water. So it was a very, it was like water, but in order to keep it from fermenting, then it had to be fermented to keep it from getting molded. Mingled, they would put spices in it, and spices to change the flavor. So one version would say mingled, one said mixed. But it would be the same thing. It would be diluted, but you'd have a spice or something in it to change the taste of it. But we know, since we're talking about wisdom here, we know that wisdom would not serve strong drink.
Right.
I mean, that's not wise to do that. So we know it was mixed or mingled. Yeah. Yeah.
It talks in the first verse, she has hewn her seven pillars.
All right. The seven pillars was a feature of their architecture that day, and it generally was for a strong building, or what we would call a magnificent building. That was the only comment that I could get from why they used the seven pillars, because most of those magnificent buildings had seven pillars on them. And it meant a nice strong building. So she is, she's built a strong sanctuary for us. I would say that's how I would interpret that for us to come to. Yeah.
I think it's interesting that there's the contrast between what adulterers do and what wisdom does. Wisdom gives you a feast. The adulteress fixes her bed.
Yeah, that's going to come up.
Yeah,
that's going to come up.
But wow.
Because there's a comparison between the two of them.
Yeah.
They're both out there trying to get attention, mm-hmm. except that the adulteresses would be doing it in darkness, mm-hmm. and in secret. Okay? Anybody else got any more they want to put on there before we go away?
Well, to me, it struck me that. And it's going to sound funny, but wisdom showed her wisdom by how she prepared.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it goes to show you, it takes wisdom in all things you do. How you prepare your household, how you what you teach your children, how you act out in life or to situations. Wisdom is a prudent thing to have.
Right. So it's one of your virtues right there. She cries from the, in verse 3, she cries from the highest place in the city.
Mm-hmm.
Where did the adulteress cry from? On the doorstep. And in darkness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Waiting for a simple person to come by. Yeah, well.
And I got a footnote in the bottom of mine that says that the number seven represents represents completeness,
mm-hmm.
and it says that it represents completeness is often used to show that it was solidly built and substantial in character.
Solid, yeah.
So it lets us know that she put time and effort into making this not just something to throw together real quick.
Right.
It was put time and effort was placed in this, and everything was done. It was completely done.
Yeah, I think we had the lesson on the, what numbers mean when we were in Revelations. And the seven represents completeness. Mm-hmm. In this case right here, most of the magnificent buildings had seven giant pillars on them.
Yeah.
So says she built her house with that. In verse 4, where they're talking about the simple, again, let me remind you, it's not for those, it has nothing to do with IQs. But here's a good definition of what I found in a commentary. The simple here represents all men in that phase of life in which vital and permanent choices are to be made. I say all men, everybody goes through a stage in their life from childhood to adulthood where it's important of how they reach that decision of which way they're going to go, what are they going to believe, what are they going to discard, and whether they're going to choose a way of simpleness of evil or whether they're going to choose a way of wisdom. So there's a phase there that he's trying to point out to. Of course, the invitation here to come to this great feast is a figurative thing, but they're really the same, coming to God, coming to Christ, coming to wisdom. Not so much about having a meal, a giant meal.
Mm-hmm.
We know that our wisdom is, we pointed out in prior verses, 1 Corinthians 1, 24 and 30, that Jesus is our wisdom. Mm-hmm. He was given to us for our wisdom.
Jerry, when I look at verses 4 and 5, to me it tells me to, when she said, let all come to my house, it means all of us. But when she said, come eat my food and drink the wine, to me it is come and listen to the meat of the word I have to teach you. You know, and like Jesus, he said, I'm the living water. Drink from those living waters or from the wine, as she puts it. That's what it kind of says to me. Be willing to learn. Be willing to partake of what I'm trying to teach you. And to me, it's kind of like, you know, wisdom, this is God's wisdom speaking here. It's God saying, listen to me. You know, take what I have to say to you and apply it to your life.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm getting out of this.
And of course, this supper is comparable to what Jesus used as parables in John 6:27 and Matthew 26:6 of the great supper where the owner had prepared a great feast and sent out an invitation to everybody, and then everybody started coming up with excuses. I got a wife, I got a cow, I got to go. And then once the doors were shut, there was no coming back. So there is a point of no return. We don't like to think about that, but there is a point of no return. We've gone too far, or we've gone too far that we cannot turn back from. All right. Anybody got any comments on those verses so far? Because the next one is comparison between the Feast of the of Folly. The first two verses here, 7 and 8, are kind of out of place, but yet they have a meaning here. And it basically refers to this text of this Proverbs is all about wisdom, it's assumed that we're going to absorb this wisdom, that we want it so bad that we're going to get wisdom, and we'll be able to tell or discern when there's hope in teaching somebody and when there's no hope of teaching somebody. It comes out plainly and tells you when you run across those kind of people, there is a time to just kick the dust off your feet. and go to others and start and trying to teach them.
That's pearls in front of swine.
That's Matthew 7:6. That's exactly what that's all about. It says, do not give what is holy to dogs, or cast your pearls before swine, or they'll just trample them. And we first say, well, everybody's got to, we should give everybody a chance. Well, there's a point in life you're going to, hopefully you'll reach that wisdom where you'll be able to discern that. That you won't be turning on your back on prospects. That you'll know that no matter what I do, you pray for them. Don't, and you feel, you feel sorry for them. But there's, you'll be wasting your time where you could be spending on more susceptible, more people who are ready to hear the gospel and the truth. Yeah.
I remember that it's also written that that they may very well be rejecting Jesus Christ and what you are saying, not rejecting you, they're rejecting the Lord's word. And two, it may not be for me to make that connection. It may be for another brother, another sister who somehow they make that connection, that bond, and then they're able to work from that point and go forward. With personalities, people just have their
backgrounds.
Yeah, and so
backgrounds
that can work in your favor, they can work against your favor. So,
and that trust that we're getting to the point in our life that we're attaining that kind of wisdom where we don't want to waste our time or God's time when we've got so many out there that, was said, the fields are ripe, you know, the harvest is plenty, and we're here getting bogged down by this person. Yeah.
And of course, we need to be reminded that we don't have so much time as we used to have.
You got that right.
No, we're getting up there. One day closer. One day closer.
What is, when he, in verse 7, he says, he that correcteth a scoffer giveth himself reveling, reviling. What is a scoffer?
Here it says mocker.
A mocker.
Mocker, yeah.
An unbeliever.
Yeah.
An unbeliever. I mean, they do not believe a strong or stronger than what we do believe. Or he that reproveth a wicked man giveth himself a blot. You just cause him trouble if you keep on saying you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong. You need to. Yeah. You've tried to talk to him. You've tried to show him, but they won't listen. Reprove not a scoffer, lest he hate you. Reprove a wise man, and he will love you. When he said reprove, what we're talking about? Reprove.
Correct.
Correct. Correct. And sometimes it hurts our feelings when we're corrected. And we want to become insulted by that. We want to become hurt by that. But God wants us to accept His reproofs. In fact, if we don't accept His reproofs, then He'll have nothing to do with us. And that was the same word we remember we say the Hebrew word for instruction. Whenever it's mentioned instruction, it's saying reproof, correction. But the next verse in my book, it says, give instruction to a wise man, give discipline to a wise man, and he will get wiser. We'll all be wiser. Teach a wise man, and he will increase in learning. Learning, we know, is knowledge. So if you teach a wise man, he'll learn from it. He'll get more knowledge. The fear of Jehovah is the beginning of wisdom. That was one of the first, I think it was verse number 7 in the very first chapter. I think it's what that was. It all starts with an awesome respect for God Almighty. And that's what we talk about fear. We're not talking about a terrified fear. And the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. In other words, it becomes understanding with common sense to us. Remember that understanding word is goes back and forth in the Hebrew meaning of it, common sense. For by me thy days will be multiplied. Look at the blessing we're going to get from it. Your days are multiplied. That means you're going to have some good long life. Your years of your life will be increased. Blessings, blessings. And thou art wise, they are wise for thyself. And they're not only blessings, but you have become blessed when they become part of your life. And if thou scoffest, if they're a doubter, or if you're an unbeliever, then you'll bear it alone. No one else is going to bear it for you. You can't blame no anybody else but yourself. Any comments? Any thoughts on those verses right there? Wisdom does not waste her efforts on evil men. Okay. So we're going to go to the next verses then. And here's the a plea for the simple ones to turn hither. Verses 13 through 18. Someone read those for me if you would. This is the evil woman as opposed to the woman of wisdom.
Okay, I'm reading from the New International Version.
Mm-hmm.
The woman folly is loud. She is undisciplined and without knowledge. She sits at the door of her house on a seat at the highest point of the city, calling out to those who pass by, who go straight on their way. Let all who are simple come in here, she says to those who lack judgment. Stolen water is sweet. Food eaten in secret is delicious. But little do they know that the dead are there, that her guests are in the depths of the grave.
Some people have pointed out that this is one of the most important chapters in Proverbs. It gives you a picture of two women, wisdom and folly. Mm-hmm. Contrast between God's way and sexual debauchery. And it, you couldn't have it pointed out to you, and with the other three chapters that we've had on this, there should be nothing in our mindset that we have any question on which way we want. Yeah,
Kathy. Scary. Huh? That's kind of scary because these two women are at the same place in the city.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So you better. Because they're at the highest point of the city, both of these.
Mm-hmm.
One's calling out.
Of course, the folly that we've been talking about here, in particular between this woman of debauchery, is basically a sin folly. But really, this pertains to all sin. They were listed out and pointed out because there was such an obvious comparison between the two. Basically, this woman of debauchery knows no shame. Doesn't even realize, you know, what she's doing or what she's gotten herself into her lifestyle. She doesn't realize that. Go ahead, John.
I'd say that she's probably well aware of her lifestyle, that she don't care. She's very well aware, but she don't care. She's kind of have the mindset, well, there is no God. I can do whatever I want, when I want, how I want. And I'm going to bring everyone down. Come to my house. I got stuff for you. Come on. This is how folly is. It's sin. But she don't care. That's her. That's the way she is.
And sometimes we fall into that not knowing that's a dead end. Mm-hmm. That's a earthly death that gets you straight to hell. Mm-hmm. Anybody got any questions of comparison between those two? Chapter 10 is going to kind of start us off on a different mindset, and that for every verse that he puts in here is something that basically we may have covered or is going to be added to your memory bank as far as your wisdom bank of God's ways. And the first verse in here of chapter 10 is the first we've read at least, I'd say up to this point, at least a dozen times. I haven't gone back and count them. But a wise son makes a glad father. But a foolish son is the heaviness of his mother. You know, if we can take this wisdom that we obtain and pass it on to our children and make sure that they understand fully the way of God, you'll have a son that makes you proud. You'll have a son just like God, Jesus, wants us to be. Wants be proud of us down here. And we know when we don't have children like that, the grief it can cause us. What's that old saying? You best hear your child cry for correction than you cry later on in life because they haven't been corrected. Also including daughters. I want to remind everybody of that. That's not sons. It's daughters also. Number two, treasures of wickedness profit nothing, but righteousness delivers from death. Ill-gotten gains, no matter how you got them, if they're ill-gotten gains, they'll not profit you anything. You may think they are, but the only thing they're going to profit you is eternal death. But being a righteous person, being aware, and you know in your heart what you're doing, you can't fool God. You can't really fool yourself. Whether if you take something that's not yours, or if you borrow something that you don't pay back, or you steal something, or you connive. They can go to the bottom of conniving somebody out of something. What we call nowadays is scamming. And all you have to do is answer the phone, and there's somebody on there that's going to scam you or trying to scam you. That's probably something that we face now that was not faced back in the day. The principle is still the same because you don't want to try to scam somebody. But you can hardly, I dare say every fifth phone call, sixth phone call I get is from somebody trying to scam. Mm-hmm. And all you got to do is work the numbers out, particularly when the age bracket gets above 50 and 60. You know, all you got to do is work the numbers out, and they're going to be successful enough to keep it on. Keep on doing it. Fortunately, we're getting wisdom over that. We're going to be aware of that. That's what this class is all about. We're not going to listen to those scammers. And we'll come up with a way, I guess, of detecting that. On occasion, my phone will say possible scam call. Mm-hmm. Not all of them, but some of them will say possible scam call.
So, Jerry?
Yeah.
What would you do with it? If you're not in my phone contacts and you call, I let it go to voicemail. Mm-hmm. Let it go to voicemail, and more often than not, they don't leave a voicemail, so that tells me right there that was a scam call.
I've gotten them coming in, you know, to show you how tricky they get. I've got them coming in, and you look the way it's coming from, it's going to be like Zuni, Virginia. You know, or some foreign place that you never heard of before.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But I don't know anybody in Zuni, Virginia. But they purposely do that so that you don't recognize where they're from. And they change that, by the way. Number three, Jehovah will not suffer the soul of the righteous to famish, but he thrusts away the desire of the wicked. God will not let you starve to death. God's not going to let you starve to death. But you can be a wicked person that desire things that you shouldn't have or don't have and you won't. And God will put you aside for that. Number four. Anybody got any comments on number three? Number four. He becometh poor that worketh with a slack hand, but the hand of the diligent maketh rich. Going back now, if you remember in our study of Proverbs, he started to repeat these things always because they're part of God. You got to work. You can't be lazy. You can't be slack. You can't have your hand out and say, give me, give me, give me. Got to work. If you will work, God's a promise that will make you rich. Maybe not so much in dollar bills, but make you rich in your life. That you fed you. You fed yourself. You fed your family. You fed your kids. You provide the home. All those things should be considered riches that we have. He's done for us. Slack hand, basically summed up, a slack hand makes a man poor. A busy hand will make you rich. He that gathereth in summer is a wise son, but he that sleepeth in the harvest is a son that causeth shame. Again, going back, you do work habits. Work habits. What's that old saying? If you're going to be a ditch, somebody mentioned it in class, if you're going to be a ditch digger, be the best ditch digger there is. And you won't be a ditch digger long.
Isn't that Doug?
What's
that Doug that says that?
What, it does? Yeah. If you think about that, that's true. Mm-hmm. That's true. If you're the best ditch digger out there, somebody's going to promote you. Mm-hmm. Mm. A smart man, of course, gathers his crops at the right time, but a man that sleeps during the time of harvest, of course, will not get his crops in and be shamed because of it. Blessings are upon the head of the righteous, but violence covers the mouth of the wicked. Repeating what we learned about saying things out of your mouth before your brain is in gear. You know, things that come out of our mouth that get us in trouble. To think about these things. Was it two eyes, two ears to see and hear, but only one mouth? Use them in proportion. Use them in proportion. Number seven, the memory of the righteous is blessed, but the shame of the wicked shall rot. When you leave this world, that's the only thing you leave it with is with people. The impression you made on people, of the goodness that you've done for people. But if you're a rotten person, that's a bad reputation to leave. Yeah.
So often people will say, maybe to themselves, how do I really want to be remembered? Because are you a slower person? Are you somebody that's always trying to get over? I never want to live my life like that. I don't want to try to do what I could to help folks whenever possible. And I think God will bless you when you're doing, trying to do the right thing. I don't want to even think about some of these things that's in Proverbs, and I fall under that category. I don't want to be slowful. I want to be. I don't want to be foolish. I want to be like a wise man. I want to do the right thing if at all possible. Because God is sitting high looking low and he sees everything you do. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a good job one of the best jobs I had, Brian Wilson. God would not, some of them wouldn't come to work. And Brian Wilson paid good money. They paid good money. As a matter of fact, we were making more money than those that sell more. Because they were waiting on our contract. That's the way it works. But I don't know how people don't want to do the right thing. I think guys miss more time than lunch. I've never seen that. Anytime I could go to work, I want to get a job of $48 paperwork. Because you can add to spend more time ducking and dodging. And the more you get the work done, you won't have to do that. That's the way I try and see things in life.
The way, we know the way you lead your life here on earth speaks more lively than you can tell me how you lived here on this earth. Your actions always speak louder than your words. Yeah, Kathy.
I think it's kind of interesting, as we've been doing in chapter 10, all the different body parts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's talking about lazy hands, memory. Oops, that's my brain I'm having trouble with. Wise heart, winks, there's your eye, the mouth. And it just goes on and on of all of our body parts. That's cool.
And up to this point, all these things have been mentioned slightly.
Right.
And God's going to keep repeating them because we got the whole picture together before we get through here.
Head to
toe. I'm not a Shakespeare person, but I remember one verse out of Shakespeare. It says, the evil that men do live after them. Mm-hmm. And that's what they're talking about, this rot here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The rot. They cause and the reputation they have. It says, the wise in heart shall receive commandments, but a prating fool shall fall. Open your hearts to what God is saying. Believe in His Word. Put them into practice. Put them as part of your mindset. But a fool, I'm talking about a prating fool here who contests and doesn't believe in that at all, he's going to fall. Basically sums up, says a sensible man will take orders, but a fool who talks back is going to be crushed. You want to change that into your own words. He that walketh in the innocent walketh securely, but he that goeth in secret is known. Number 10, he that winketh the eye with the eye causes sorrow, but a prating, again, a prating fool shall fall. We just had that up there in that verse 8, a prating fool will fall. What's he talking about when he says the winking of the eye?
He says, winks maliciously.
How can you, give me an example of that. Yeah, tell this person over here something, and then go over here and tell him. That was prevalent in those days.
I was trying to wink malicious. You didn't catch it. Did I do it right?
But what you're really doing, you're lying. You're telling this fellow here, he's a great guy.
Yeah.
Number 11, the mouth of the righteous is a fountain of life, but the violence covered the mouth of the wicked. A lot of great things can come out of your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of helpful, God-like sayings and words can come out of your mouth. And it's a fountain to someone who's waiting to be talked to, waiting to be praised, waiting to be uplifted. But you got an evil mouth, those wicked things just cause violence. We're going to stop there. We're out of time anyway. We're going a little bit. We'll pick up number 12 when we come back to the next class in here. Thank you guys for being